Dirty Lola is an award-winning sex edutainer, speaker, and self-proclaimed dildo slinger. Known for her live sex ed Q&A show, Sex at a Go-Go, and as a sexpert on the Emmy-nominated Netflix docuseries, The Principles of Pleasure, Lola has spent over a decade working to end the stigma and shame surrounding sex and sexuality. Having started her own journey, sharing personal discoveries with Polyamory and Kink Online, Lola now uses her knowledge, warm candor, and public platforms to teach the masses in person and rapt internet and television audiences. Ladies, gentlemen, queers, nims, thems, we have Dirty Lola. Fabulous. So if you listen to the original episodes of Trauma Queen, if you haven't, go back and listen. We had this guest. And so you've already heard the intro because you get it. But who are you? Can you introduce yourself to us? I think it's always different to hear, you know, what's written out and then what the vibes are today. You might describe yourself as totally different. So who are you?
Hello, I'm Dirty Lola, and I am a sex educator based in Brooklyn. And the title sex educator is many hats for me. So I do entertainment. I work in a sex shop. I do a lot of media work. So we do a lot of things under that big, bright umbrella that is called sex education.
Yes, yes. And we're going to talk all about sex ed. We're also going to talk about how you're also a sexutainer. Sexutainer? Well, I'm working on, I can't say it right.
It's a sex edutainer?
We're going to get into
edutainer?
That.
Yeah, edutainer.
When you combine the entertainer with the educator, sedutainer.
Yes. Or yes. Something.
Okay, we'll get into her because she's confusion. But how did we meet? And I want to hear your version of it because I've heard it multiple times and I think it's funny.
Yeah.
And I think the world should know.
We met at Sex Geek Summer Camp, which is a camp that at the time was happening in the mountains of West Virginia.
The woods.
So I need you to, the mountains. Like, we were driving into a small town in West Virginia. I just soaked that in.
I don't know why we did that.
And it is a business retreat for people who do sex education, therapy, anything under the sex umbrella, porn stars, therapists, sex educators, people who are just trying to do programs, whatever, people who run organizations of all types. If it touches the realm of sex, it's a business camp to kind of help people get through, because we don't have a lot of resources if sex is part of your work. You don't, you know, it's really hard to kind of get those things. So we met, I think it was my second year, your first year, and
that was a fucking rough time.
It was a rough time, and I just remember seeing you all the time in a white t-shirt. At the time, I didn't understand what was happening, but your luggage had gotten lost, and your roommates, because you were like ready to leave, and your roommates were like, no, and everybody banded together and gave you clothes, because it took you didn't get your luggage till like day three.
Almost we were
about to go home and you got close suddenly. And I don't remember what we had, what had happened in the tent, but we were down the hill from the teaching dome and I think we were getting ready to go to breakfast. We were going one of the meals and you walk up to me and you go, hi, I like you. We're friends now. You're welcome. And I was just like, okay. Okay, whatever you say.
You know what? Sometimes you see an opportunity and you want to give someone a gift. And sometimes you just give it, you know? Everyone take notes.
It's been a gift every day since. Yeah.
Years, y'all.
It's
you know,
been
everyone doesn't
it's
get
been
this
years.
Gift.
This is true. This is true.
But also, and this fits because it's Black History Month, y'all. And we are two Black ladies that met in the goddamn woods of West Virginia. And we drove past... The racism was around us, let's be honest. But
yes.
I also want to know, because we are Black ladies, oftentimes when we are together, people think we hate each other. Why is that, Lola?
This is the bane of, I think, Black people, but especially Black women who really adore each other and have the, you know, we call each other bitch and we're like, what? And we're just snapping, but it's with love and we know it's love and we're making fun of things that we've talked about. It's all like inside stuff, but people are always like, are you okay? I saw you in gym. Are you okay? And I'm like, what? We're fine. What is wrong with you? What do you mean? Like, and it's never tense. I don't know. And this goes to show you, like, the way people perceive our facial, you know, expressions, our mannerisms. If you really knew body language, the way people think they know body language, you could see we're not fighting. We're, like, relaxed. We're laughing usually. I doubt our faces. Yeah. Like, you have a really good serious face, but it's not like a mad or mean face. You do a really good straight face. And I'm usually cracking the fuck up. So I don't know where people are getting...
Maybe that's why they're confused.
Maybe, but it's just like, where is this coming from? And it's like,
you know how this could be fixed, though, honestly?
People mind their business. Just mind your business and it doesn't matter.
Out the gate. We ain't even done nothing yet.
Oh, but yeah, no. To be fair, a couple times it's been a friend or a very specific friend who's bad at picking up body language. And I'm just like, just so you know, you would know if we were fighting. Everybody would know if we were fighting. Yeah.
That's funny. Okay, let's get into this fun. We have so much to talk about. And we're going to start off with, what does trauma mean to you?
Ooh. Oh, God. It's something that I simultaneously wish I haven't experienced, but am thankful for the human it's formed me into. It's a dichotomy. It's the, you know, knowing you wouldn't be who you are without that, but also many times just wishing you didn't go through what you went through. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. And I love asking this question because everyone experiences differently, and so they're able to verbalize it differently. Mm-hmm. And I think with asking that question, you will have at least 1 to 5,000 people that go, I get that version.
Yeah.
And so it helps to, like, normalize all of the things, because I don't know anyone that doesn't have any trauma in their life. They're like, oh, I'm fine.
We know one person that likes to pretend.
He's a liar.
Yeah.
He lies. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I mean, talk about trauma. I didn't think about it because I was always in survival mode as a kid. Like, I realized as an adult that it was a question that was always hard to answer. Like, you know, in school, they always ask you, and I would come up with something asinine. Like, I want to be an ice skater ballerina, astronaut. And I knew it was tomfoolery, but I didn't know. I don't think I thought about the future. I don't know if I realized the peril I was living in, but it was always the next moment. Like, are we going to have food? Is my mom going to be mad? Am I going to get beaten? Do I, you know, all the things. So my brain never thought about that far in advance. Now, I don't think I thought about what I wanted to be until high school. And that was like, tainted with trying to escape my mom. It was choosing a school to get me away so I didn't have to. It was a reason, right? Like, it was the only way I was gonna get away was to go away to college. And like, so you have to kind of decide what you want to be when you're picking a college. And so at that time I wanted to be a writer, and I did enjoy writing. I was writing a lot at the time. I was writing a lot of bad poetry, but I was writing a lot and I was pretty good at it. So I was like, okay, yeah. Is this a job? Can you do this?
He's about to be on deaf poetry.
But then, you know, but that was, I think, the closest I ever got to this is a thing. Because then I got kicked out, like, right after I graduated. And my mom, surprise, 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 was like, I don't. She's like,
surprise, surprise.
I know you. Well, it wasn't even bi. It was literally like within, I think, 2 weeks. It was, I graduated, and then she was like, you need to call that college because I don't have money to pay for all the things that I told you I was going to pay for so that you could go. And I had scholarships, but it had, you know, the plight many of us go through. And because my mom, fun fact, if you have a parent who has gone to school as an adult, a college as an adult, you can't get money from the government because the loans are kind of leveraging off your parents and you need your parents to sign it and you can't get a loan on your own if you're under 18. And so because she already had loans, I couldn't get loans. So so I got kicked out like within that 2 weeks. So I had to call the college and say, I'm not coming. I got kicked out of my house and I was immediately working. So it was, you know, that there went that. And then it was just jobs. So I never thought about a career. It was like, what is paying me money now? Yeah.
So from just winging it, can we talk about one of these jobs? Because I like wrestling.
Yes. And oh my gosh.
Once you found out I liked wrestling, where did you work?
I worked at the WWE restaurant that used to be in Times Square. It is now a Hard Rock. I think it's a Hard Rock.
Everything's a Hard Rock.
It's a Hard Rock or one of those. It's a, but it's not the WWE anymore. And that was a time. That was post 9/11. Because,
Okay, I just had to throw that in. That has nothing to do with anything. But someone's going to be like, oh, shit. Okay, so if you were just winging it and just, you know, basically surviving, making money to do the things, how the hell did you become a sex educator, a sedutainer, sexutainer? We're working on that. But how did you even get there? And, like, what does that even mean? What does that mean? Like, what is a sex educator? Because I think people also are very confused. About what that is.
Yes. Well, let's start with the definition. Sex educator can mean different things. Like, there are people who teach children in schools and go in and teach sex education classes specifically. Oftentimes it's the health teacher or the PE teacher in a school, and they're not necessarily a sex educator, but this is someone who's went to school, learned about human sexuality, and is going to talk about both pleasure-based and reproduction-based sex ed and safer sex, etc. And then there are folks who work with adults and teach adults about all the myriad of things under sex and bodies. And this includes like young adults in college and then above. And then we have folks who do, I don't know, there's people have their own little niche. I think there's been some folks getting angry about like, what's a sex educator? And what, well, I went to college and I did this, and it's like, yeah, but up until what, maybe 5 years ago, you couldn't go to college to be a sex educator. You could get your master's in something, which usually it was like public health, or people would go for a therapist to be a therapist or a psychologist, or it'd be something in that realm. And then they might go take some classes and extend that. And then there's Widener College that you can get a master's, but you already have to have a bachelor's. I don't think it matters what your bachelor's is in, but you can't do that program until you have that. So there wasn't anything. And when I was coming up, even trying to get like a certificate course was not a thing. Like now you throw a rock and you hit a certificate course. I teach for a certificate course. But you couldn't, there was nothing. There was SFSI in San Francisco, which wasn't really a class to be a sex educator. It was to comprehensive sex ed courses so that you could work for their hotline. And people were realizing it was a way to get the breadth of knowledge or to round out what you already knew. Planned Parenthood had a certificate program that's no longer a certificate program. They call it their cornerstone program now. Those were the only things that really existed. So in the beginning, I didn't even call myself a sex educator. I was like, I am a sex encourager. And that was my thing. And how I got, it's meandering. I have no idea. Like, it's life. You know, I working just survival jobs, like waiting tables. I've worked at a doggy daycare. I was a dog walker. I've worked in real estate property management for awful people. And I've done lots of admin and secretarial work, all those things. And the undercurrent that was going on was me just being me. I've always been voracious about learning. Part of my trauma and my hypersexuality was that I wanted to learn about sex. So I was always curious. I wanted to read about it, learn about it. I found my grandfather's porn stash when I was really young. It was magazines. And I was like, ooh, you know, it was curious. I did surveys as a child in school. When I learned the word cunt.
Excuse me?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's elaborate a little, because what are the surveys?
I learned the word cunt, and because he had a lot of those. I don't know if you've seen them. They're like booklets, and it's like black and white, shitty paper, and they're like stories or letters people write in, or fantasies.
No, but I'm intrigued.
So these, they're like, it was in his porn stash. Now, I found them in Vegas once in like a store that had a lot of magazines. So they're like more of the brain porn, but it's really, they're really, there's a lot of stuff in there. So the first time I read the word cunt, I was like, what? Is that what you call it? I got so excited. So I took a little piece of paper and I was like, do you know the word cunt? Yes or no? And then I was like, well, what do you call yours? What do you call, because my mom called it a cootie cat. Like, I knew that wasn't the real name. And I'm like, well, what is your mom?
I've also heard a cootie cat.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Coochie cat, cootie cat, cooter. We didn't do cooter. Cooter is real country. But
cookie.
We didn't do cookie either. But that was, I wanted to know. So I was like, do you know the word cunt? And I put a little tick mark. And then I said, well,
who'd you ask?
Kids at lunch. Other kids. I was in first or second grade. First grade, because I remember I asked Amy, and Amy was in my first grade class. I remember Amy's face right now. She was like, but she answered. But kids had, they were like, oh, I've heard,
they had answers.
It was either no, or it would be like, oh my, blah blah blah, and how they knew the word. And then I got everybody's nicknames for their vulvas. And it was just a time, but that was just, I was that kind of kid. Like, I wasn't trying to be mischievous in a bad, like, I was just actually curious. And nobody talks to you about sex. Nobody has those conversations. HBO and Skinemax were very prevalent at the time. So there was a lot of stuff that I had access to because people would fall asleep while we were watching TV. Like, my grandmother babysat me a lot. You know what it's like having old parents or old caretakers. So they fall asleep and you just like, mm-mm-mm.
Oh, they do like a good nap, honey.
Had that last channel set so you can just flick it back real quick. Yep. Yep.
Back button to save your life.
Oh, so I had like access to stuff, and I had found that porn that nobody knew. I still to this day don't think any of the adults in my life knew that I had found that. But it was like, oh my God. And so I would read about stuff. And then as I got older and I kept, you know, you have more access to things and reading. And I just became like this tiny encyclopedia about stuff. Cosmo, though Cosmo has had its moments, it was also just a plethora of things about bodies and sex and relationships and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So I became the sex friend through middle school into high school. Like, I was the sex friend. I was the one who, like, knew that weird shit. I'd be like, well, here's this thing that you did you know about? Have you heard about this? And I went to a really progressive high school, and we had... we're having sex parties. I was just talking about this at Thanksgiving at a Friendsgiving with one of the friends. We were reminiscing about it, and it was just like, yeah, it was what we were doing, but there was consent involved, and it was like fuckery, but it wasn't fuckery. And then as an adult, like, I just remember, well, one, I was always very, like, happily slutty. But then I fell in love and thought, like, oh, maybe I was slutty because I needed to be in love. And I fell in love. And I had a midlife fucking crisis, a quarter life crisis, because I'm like, who the fuck is this? I don't like the human being I am. I'm not enjoying this. Mm-hmm. I was missing something, and I got a Twitter account. I started talking about my sex life, recanting old stories. I told my partner, my now ex-husband, told him that, like, I realized I was kinky and wanted to explore it, and, like, I had a couple of online doms. I was learning about polyamory. I had an affair with the first man I was ever in love with in high school, when we went to high school together, and realized with that I didn't want to leave my husband, but that I wanted to expand, because I was polyamorous back then and didn't have a label for it. And I'm like, oh, this is why you're not fucking happy, because you're not supposed to be monogamous. And then I started, like, trying to have more outlets to be
titties out there,
to titties and sexuality. And how can you do that? So I started hosting burlesque shows for a friend, and going to different events and things. And at the time, Ducky Doolittle was living in New York, and she did a dirty bingo. And so we would go to that. And that's where I found out about conferences, because everybody was going to the very first Catalyst Con before it was called something different.
Okay.
I forget what it was.
I only know it as Catalyst Con.
Yeah, it was. They did one, like, to start with, and it was D and somebody else, and I forget her name, and then they kind of took a break, and then D kept going and broke off and became Catalyst Con. So I found out about it, like, set up, I was stalking it. I kept looking it up, because I was like, when it comes back, I want to go. And the first one we went to was in D.C., because they used to do it bi-coastal, so I went to the one in D.C., and at the time, I had a decent following on Twitter, because I was showing my titties, doing Titty Tuesdays. I had a blog where I was talking about my journey into polyamory and kink, and also telling stories from my, like, sordid sexual past, and I had, like, a decent following on Tumblr, and so I went in, and it was heaven. I just was surrounded with all these people doing different work with their hands in different things. I was meeting sex workers who were talking about, like, it was the first time I got to hear sex workers talk about sex workers and talk about what they needed and what they wanted and how to be an ally and how to help. And it was the first time I got to be in a room where people were calling people out for being shitty and white.
Or, you was like, this is fun.
I was where like, okay. Or, you know, the fact that, like, oh, like, I remember Ducky was on the opening keynote and everybody was giving their credentials, and Ducky's like, well, I didn't go to college, so fuck all of you, but I'm still here because I'm up here with you, because, you know, college doesn't mean everything. And for me, that meant so much, because that, knowing I never got to go to college, knowing that that was always a thing that kind of, I regret it, but it wasn't a thing that was available to me that I couldn't do, that it, like, made me feel ashamed, or that I wasn't as smart as I thought I was, or even just, like, you know, who's going to listen to me because I don't have that. So getting to see somebody talk with confidence about that there are many different ways to learn and there are many different ways to have a craft and hone a craft was important. But it was just magic, like, meeting all these people while just being in this environment. And I was like, I want to be a part of this. Like, how do I get to be a bigger part of this sex positive community? And that's where Sex at a Go-Go came. So I decided, because I was hosting shows, and really with the friend I was hosting her shows, we had a house party, and at the end of the night, it would always happen after a party, somebody would ask a question about sex or something, and I would drag out my toy box and be like, oh, have you seen this? Do you know what this is? Or we'd end up talking, and one night she turns to me and she goes, you need to do this for other people. And I'm like, what? She's like, this. You do this for us all the time, but, like, people don't have this. People don't have someone they can ask questions, and it's not like a class, and you're funny, and you're making me laugh, but you're helping me out. And she's like, you need to do this. And I was like, nobody is going to come listen to me talk about sex on the stage for, like, a half hour or whatever. And she's like, I don't know. So it birthed slowly. I think the first mini Sex at a Go-Go I did as a burlesque act in one of her shows. So I had questions out and did a whole thing, and it went over well. And then I started doing the show, but this was all me just sitting going, okay, I think I want to do this. And actually The person that helped spurn it was Francisco Ramirez.
We love
Paco.
Love.
And I work with him all the time, and he's one of my favorite people. But he did a class about making your dreams a reality. Like, how do you take, basically, like a man, not more manifesting, but also like, what, how do you take a thing that's a thought and develop it out into something real? And by the end of that, and this was at Catalyst, so by the end of that workshop at Catalyst, I had 5 pages about sex at a go-go. I had how I wanted to do the show. I was so excited, and it took me 2 more Catalysts, so bi-coastal. So we did I figured this out on the East Coast, we went to the West Coast, and I was like, had figured out a venue and all these things. And by the time we were on the East Coast again, I was weeks away from my show. My first venue went out of business. It was a bar that used to be a bathhouse. And so they still had, in the basement, they had like the rooms that used to be the sauna rooms, but now they were just chill rooms, but the doors still slid closed. And it was, I know, how does that close? And I remember them calling me and saying, hey, sorry, but we're going out of business like next week. I was like,
you're like, so what does that mean? It's over? Or
it's over. So then, but I found a new venue, and I think my first show, I think I had, how many, 3 people? And it was all people I knew, but
you did it.
And your friends, you know, I know, we all say, look, oh, you said that because you're friends. I don't surround myself with people who lie or who will be, they'll be like, that was good. You know, but they'll give you their real thing. So to have people be hype, you know, like, not just like, oh, good job. They were like, oh, shit, like, you're going to do this again? You're going to do it again. And I was hyped because I had gotten it. The thing you spend all this time crafting and creating happened.
Yeah.
And that was the birth. And then that begat me getting out of working regular jobs. I started working at Shag, which is a sex shop in Brooklyn. And then through Shag, I started developing classes and teaching for their workshop program. And then when I started teaching, I was like, okay, I'm actually educating. Like, I felt confident in saying, I know I'm sharing stuff that I actually know about. And that was when I started using Sex Educator. And then doing that and doing Sex at a Go-Go, I was going to colleges with the show. I was going all over the U.S. I did a tour in California. I was, you know, on so many podcasts. I was still on Twitter talking about stuff. And it wasn't this linear thing or this thing that I planned. It was just like doors kept opening the more I was doing things. And so that's how we got here, was this slow ramping of a lot of imposter syndrome, but a lot of like, no, I know I can do this.
That imposter syndrome girl, she loves to hang out. She just likes to, she's like, are you doing well? It's me. Remember that one time you were a silly bitch? That's what everyone thinks of you. Yeah. You're like, what?
Do you really know what you're doing and what you're talking about?
You know what I think is interesting about this journey is it was always meant for you.
Right.
Like you still, like people, I think people look at individuals like us and go, oh my God, they do all these things, but don't ever think about all the shit we did and have to still go through, which we're going to talk about. But like, what is this industry even like? Because I think people look at it and they're like, you have so much fun and it's just sex and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like polyamory. Everyone's like, you guys just be fucking all the time. I'd be like, who be fucking all the time?
Not me.
Where are they at? Where's that at? So like, what is, I can speak to it, but you could really, because people don't know, y'all need to look up the Lolodex. Okay. But what is this industry like? And what do you wish that people knew about it?
It's very segregated in a way of sections. Like there's pleasure products, and that's a whole, like I've worked in the sex shop for 10 years. I've been selling sex toys for that long. I talk about them a lot in my work, but I've really started doing pleasure products because I've been working for Spectrum Boutique and helping and going the buying and looking through products and stuff. So being in those environments, that was new because I had to let people know who I was all over again. And I am not somebody who walks into a place like, you should know me. And some people are like, well, they should know who you are. And I'm like, why would they? Their business isn't in the education. Their business is the product. So if you're not really in the product sector, and I knew some people, so there are brands we worked with, we're friends with, who've met us that would show up because we met them, like I met Alicia back in the Catalyst days. So, you know, there are people that I met through like conferences who also then either started their own companies, were working with other companies, but there was a whole slew of people that are still getting to know me, are still getting to know who I am and like what I do. And so that was like a whole other thing. And then you have like your porn and porn. That's a huge, big, giant part of the industry, but it's a whole separate part of the industry from sex ed. And though we try to like bridge the gap and mix it a little bit, there's a lot of the powers that be that are like, oh, this doesn't belong here, or it won't do well here, 'cause that's not what people are here for. And then you have like, when you get to sex ed, you have your academic parts of sex ed, like your teachers and your like they're teaching programs, they're teaching at colleges, or they're teaching kids. And then you have like your sexfluencers, who I think are important. There's a lot of them that aren't, but sorry, being shady. But you know what I mean? I think there are people who know what they're talking about and then also talk about products because they are back it up. And there are people who just hold it up and go, I use this, you know, and they get to skate
away. It's pink.
Right. So I think that there's a difference between people who are actually educated around stuff and then also talking about products and things. And then folks who are just like, they sent me this. I like it. You know, you're going to buy it because you follow me. So there's a lot of that that's separated. I think people think we're more cohesive than we are.
And then we all know each other. We don't know each other.
I mean, I do know a decent amount of people across platform, but that is that's a lot of work. Like, it's been years of also cultivating, you know, getting to know people and people knowing me and trusting me and knowing the kind of person I am. So then they easily, effortlessly will introduce me to people because they know I'm not shitty, you know. And I, same for you, I think we both have that kind of people like, do you know so-and-so? Like, I get that a lot. You get that.
I do get it, but I'm not you. People think I know it, a lot of things. Like, no. They're like, you do know.
I do know a lot of people. I know, because I'm nosy.
But I don't want to. Yeah. That's why. I'm very selective of, you know, my energy. I can't absorb all that.
Yeah, but I got, you know, for me, I like to.
I like it, though. It helps me.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, too, is for me, it's like I keep an eye. I want to know what's going on. What are you doing? Especially if I, which I guess is a thing that I've been become known for, is if I'm really excited, I'm on your side. I'm going to help you. Like, I will be like, do you know this person? Let me give you all this. What can I do for you? Because I'm always looking for shit we need more of, especially like Black women doing this work, women doing this work, people being innovative in this work who aren't just surfing on what's already existing. Like, I will be your biggest cheerleader and also try to connect you with whoever I can. That is why I try to like at least know who somebody is so that I can be like, well, check this out or whatever. But I think that's a thing people don't get, that we're sectioned off. I don't think they realize how much of a struggle it still is as a Black person doing this work.
Well, listen, you just got there. Let's do it. Because this episode is about this industry, but also it's the trauma within, and it's Black History Month. So, what is it like being Black in this industry? But also, what is it like being a Black woman? Also, I'm going to just keep fleshing it. What is it like to be a Black woman that's not necessarily thin? Right? Like, there's the layers of that. Mm-hmm. And then you also get, what is it like being a Black woman who's also light-skinned?
Mm-hmm. Listen, first of all, being Black and being in sex ed is such a, there's so eye-opening, especially as a light-skinned person, because I think people forget that, you know, we all, deservedly so, some of my sugar cookie brethren are not, you know, I don't have a tan right now, so I'm a sugar cookie right now, but, you know, can be awful. You know, people that don't realize their privilege, the privilege that comes with being the more palatable of whatever.
Colorism.
You
know?
Mm-hmm. Right. And so when you do realize that, but you're within, it's like you're a spy. Because people say things around you that they wouldn't say around other people. And there's a lot of times that I have to school my face because I want to let you finish. I'm not going to fight with you because I want to hear it out. So later I could be like, oh, but this is what happened. And you're like, oh my God, I didn't realize you heard me say that. Oh my God. Because I blended in. So there's a lot that... There is this responsibility. There's also the responsibility I feel we do have of uplifting, pulling other people up, pointing out our darker skin counterparts, because people just act like we don't exist as a whole. They're like, well, there's not a lot of Black sex educators. And I'm like,
there's a whole organization that we're a part of.
It's called WalkShin. But there's a plethora. It's just
so many
things have been so sectioned off that you don't know. It's like when we were doing like we talk about like Exp is the sex word of the year this year. Well, of 2023. Now it's 2024. My reign is ending soon, but I might win again. Who
maybe.
Knows?
Maybe. I don't know. It's gonna maybe. Come out after. We're gonna have to do an update.
I know, we're gonna have to do an update. But people were like, well, there are no Black people. And I had to be on the list, but have to go like the first few years. This isn't my first time on the list that have been on the list. And the first couple years, I had to be the one to say, fuck this list. Fuck this, because why am I the only Black person? Or why are there only three people of color? And all of us are fucking white or light. We're either white passing or light for our categories. And like, other people would chime in, but it's like I can't even be honored because I have to fight for everybody else. And I do, because if I don't fight for everybody else, I'm not fighting for myself either. And it's shitty. And having people who also have marginalized identities but are white be mad that I'm saying something, because I'm like, I get you want to be honored and I get that this doesn't happen for you, but we can't take this and you know, just be like, thank you, when there's a clear chasm in what's going on. There's this is a problem. There's too many of us for our faces not to be on. And then there's also the like doing the work of like, hey, if you want to be included in this, you have to become part of this community that you may not want to really be a part of. So that was something too, of doing the outreach of being like, hey, you can join XBiz. It's very easy to go get an XBiz account. It's very easy. It might not be something you use all the time, but it's good to
never
get.
Never use it, but I have it.
Right, but you have it, but you also, it's good to get the press releases. It's good to get the news. You get the emails. I'm never really in my account, but I'm like, I like getting the email updates because that's how I know the tea and what's going on, who's doing what.
Yeah.
But then if you're a member, you can go in when it's time to nominate and nominate whoever you want to nominate. I do that all the time every year. I go in and put names and I'm like, so it's there's this split of wanting to be, we should be included without having to do all this work. But they do have this space to say, well, the nominations come from inside. They're coming from members. Yeah. So if you're not a member, you can't really complain because you're not on there doing the things. So we have shit like that we have to contend with. And it's also feeling like you have to be always at the height of doing something. This past year felt very self-crisis-y for me because I came off of being in two media projects that were huge that came out very close together. Shot them very far apart, but they came out very close together. So I didn't get to spread out the love. And then having a year of not getting anything because I don't have a manager. We know that that's not a thing. One, it's not a thing because nobody's looking at us, no matter the tone of our skin. They're not coming in to find the Black folks. Two, because of the work we do, and we're not influencers, because I tell people that all the time, I'm not an influencer. I'm a sex educator.
I always have influencer adjacent, because I'll still take an influencer coin. Hold on now.
Well, no, but I'm not. But my job is a sex educator. When you hire me, you're hiring me because I know shit. You're not hiring me because I have 2.3 million followers and I'm cute. You're hiring me because I'm smart. I can talk about your product. And when I'm talking about your product, I'm talking about it from a factual standpoint. And once I love you, I'm going to always talk about you, whether you're paying me or not. Pay me that first time, but you're always going to be in that back part of my head, because I want to keep supporting brands who I do love. But we don't get all that. Like, we don't, people kind of won't take you on. I don't think people get that either. They think that what we do, there's, you got to have a team. And I'm like, first of all, you have to pay a team. That's not always, we're not always as lucky to have.
Can we also talk to the fact that people don't want to pay us?
That part, Taraji. It's happening all over. It's happening all over. They don't want to pay us. They tell you your rate is too high. They tell you, and here's my thing. I mean,
We know.
We all talk to each other. We ask the moment something goes off that says undisclosed recipients. Did you get an email from this person? Hey, did these people, what'd they offer you?
Group chat. Because we have to. Yeah.
But also, the canary in the coal mine is if Erica Hart is on something, we know you have money, because Erica doesn't do things for free. And when you come back and you tell me you don't have money, that's a lie.
Because you know what else I'm going to do? Hey, Erica girl. Oh, they did? Oh.
Hey, Erica human. But you know, but yeah, just, it's so ridiculous that, and also when they tell you your rate is too high, or like, I'm like, here's what you can get for this. I won't say the company, but I quoted them. They asked me for something, and I'm like, it was like a reel, which I charge more for reels because I don't like doing them, because they're a lot of work. You know, you charge higher for the stuff that you need to be encouraged to do. So it was a reel. They wanted a fixed post. They wanted multiple stories. So I was like, okay, that would be like $800. So $800 for what you're asking for. And I'm like, we can whittle that down. If you don't want, you know, we could take some away. And they were like, well, that's a lot. And I'm like, I'm probably cheaper than most people. That's not, I don't think. And also, because I know I don't have the influencer markers that people are looking for. I lower my price, not because I don't think I'm worth it, but I get that there's also certain benchmarks that people are trying to meet with influencers. I've had people turn me down because they're like, oh, you don't have enough hits. And I'm like, that's fine. I won't. So, and I'll sometimes, before I even, I'm like, I'm not even going to waste my time or yours. I'm not going to have what you're looking for. If you want to work with me because you want to work with me because I'm fabulous, I know what I'm talking about, and I'm great at what I do, and you want my face backing your product just as a trustworthy thing, great. Mm-hmm. If you need me to have 1,000 hits on a story or whatever, it's not going to happen. And also, because if you don't have a lot of product, like, I don't get a lot of product placement things, so I don't have that to share. I recently had somebody reach out and they were like, well, you haven't worked. And I'm like, no, I don't work with a lot of products, like a lot of companies, because also the companies who want to work with us want to send us free fucking product. They don't want to pay us. Yeah. And, or they say, I said, I will gladly, if you want to send me something so I could check it out, but I'm not doing content for you for free, and I don't do content for an affiliate code, because that doesn't turn into money for the amount of time I've spent. Like, if that's a plus, that's an addition. It's not payment. Like, having the affiliate code is nice. I'll add it to the list, because people do ask, and they like to be able to, like, support me if they can. But also, like, trying to track and get paid, and we don't have, unless they're using like a program like ShareCell, there's no way for you to track to see who used what. You're having to trust that they're paying you based off of whatever. I have plenty of companies who are like, oh yeah, and I'm like, I won't know, because there's no way for me to track that. So I don't like doing that. I don't want an affiliate code as payment. And then sometimes I don't know if I like your product. So send me the product and then I'll let you know, because I am definitely not somebody who's going to promote things that I don't like. If I don't like it, and it's not about that it's bad. It's if it didn't work for me.
We talked about this the other day. It doesn't work for my body.
No, I don't like rabbit toys. It could be the most fantastic. I got a rabbit toy right here on the floor that I just got sent from a brand. They sent all their new stuff for 2024. I'm excited about everything except for this fucking rabbit toy. This rabbit toy is going into my raffle pile and it looks great. I just don't like rabbit toys. So why would I talk about that? Or why would I push that? But I will talk about this other shit, this pile. I'll be like, oh, okay. But it's like, yeah, I need the product to test it out or to see. We talked about another brand who, when I got the product, it was like,
what is it scared this? Me.
Not the scary one, man. I should have gotten that. But the other thing that I opted instead of the scary thing. And then I was like, this is not even going to work for me.
Oh, that part. Okay.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is I don't want to agree until I know. And then I can get back to you and be like, hey, blah, 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 blah. I would love to work. Thank you for sending this stuff. But I don't know. Our other, like, I guess because you have, like, dentists will say, like, yeah, and they'll take your toothbrushes and give them to their clients without knowing how well they work. But I don't want to be that person. I have condom companies who are always like, we want to send you condoms. I'm like, you don't make latex-free condoms. I'm extremely allergic. And they're like, oh, yeah, but my favorite is, we're black owned and you should support us. And I'm like, I don't know how your condoms, but I can't tell, I can't speak to your quality. You could be great. I can't speak to the quality. I'm not putting them down. I'm not going to say whatever, but I can't speak to the quality. So therefore I don't feel comfortable promoting. And that's across the board. I don't do it for anybody. And then when you argue with me, like, well, latex is safer. Not if you're fucking allergic to it. Latex is stronger. Sure, but I'll go into anaphylaxis. It'll kill me. Like, and why do I have to have these arguments? So that's the other part of being black in this business, is that other black people just automatically expect allegiance, even if their stuff is subpar.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah. Because I'm here for us. I'm always rooting for everybody black, but you're going to...
I'm not, though.
Wait. Until you disappoint me. That's what I was going to say. I'm here until I'm like, oh, well, fuck this. You off the rooting list. I can't.
And I want to be.
Right.
I want to be so bad, but I'm so quick to be like, you did what? Oh.
But it's not
for you.
And it's not even it's not even holding them to a higher level. I'm holding you to the same level that I'm holding the white folks. I want you want me to support you, then you need to be at the standard. I'm not asking you to be better. When you're below the standard, but you still want me to support you, or when it's almost like bullying. Like, oh, you don't support other black people? First of all, you don't support me because you just rolled into my DMs today. You aren't even following me, because that's why you in the hidden DMs.
That part, and they'd be like, I've loved your work. I've been following. I go, I'm like, since when?
Yeah.
How you seen it?
Because I can go, because you know you can go and put, like, latest follow, and they don't know that you can do that. You can see who just fucking followed you. All the time.
It's true.
And I also know about seeing somebody, thinking they're amazing, and going and following, but I'm never going to be in your DMs like, I always followed your work. I'm like, I just found you. I found you through this. I heard you on this pod, whatever, but be honest about it and be organized. Be organized and don't ask me for the world when you can't even, like, I also don't want to work just for fellowship. I'm not working for freedom. Like, because we're black, we should know. It's different. If we are friends, we are friends.
Can we also, that's different. You know how I feel about this F word.
Mm-hmm.
In this industry, there's a lot of people that will be like, oh my God, I'm friends with them. I know them. You may have seen me. Maybe we spoke one time. Mm-hmm. We are not friends. Because if we were friends, you would know how I felt about that word. And I don't use that F word with most people.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Don't use my name for clout.
Yeah, I will say we've hung out. I will say, oh, I know them, we chill, like, oh, I've seen them, you know, or whatever. I never say friend unless it's true. A colleague, you know, like, oh, yeah, that's my, you know, whatever. But, yeah, don't throw out the friend word. But also, there's a difference between us doing things for and with each other because we know each other, we support each other. Our payments are coming to each other in a myriad of ways. We also help each other make coin. That's not the same as, like, you know me, and I'm also Black. And, like, I know of you, never met you in person. You're also Black, but you're in my DMs trying to kill me. with your latex, and you're arguing with, and then my, and always, I never come with, I'm never like, well, you don't make this. I'm like, hey, is it in the works? Every condom company, no matter who owns it, who comes into my DMs, I always say, are you working on a latex free option? Is that in the works? And I hate it when it becomes them being defensive, because I'm like, I'm not accusing you of anything. I know how the FDA works. I know that you can't just out the gate come out with a polyisoprene or whatever condom. I know that. I'm asking you, is it a thing for the future? Because, and then I'll send them stats. Do you know how many people are allergic to, this is a marketing moment for you. I would love to be the person who's talking about you coming out with an amazing new, latex free condom, because there's only so many. There's only so many, and let's get into this. And I've, you know, so I'm still out here like, I want to work with you. How do we, you know, keep me in mind? I say this all the time. Don't be defensive, because now you're going to be on my shit list. Because there is a particular company that I'm just like, who I follow because I need to be following, because I need to know what's going on and what they're working on. But multiple times, well, because, you know, because multiple times they've asked me, and I'm like, you've asked me this before. So also don't remember who you talking to, and how many times. Don't tell me you love me and you didn't remember that you talked to me 3 months ago and argued with me.
Oh, that was somebody else. They don't work here no more. That's my favorite line. Oh, no, they don't even work here no more. I can't believe they said that. Shut up.
But okay, it makes me,
I know it came from you.
And it makes me feel, it upsets me, because I'm already arguing with white people. I don't need to argue with you. I don't want to argue with you. I don't want us to argue. I want you to hear what me, a Black woman, is telling you is a thing in the world that needs to be, and that you get that I'm trying to put you on, like, in a whole other way. Because then we have white people to argue with who are confusing us for other people.
Girl.
Who we then still have to work. Like, I'm going to work, leaving, well, we'll say last month. I was in LA for the Vibe Expo, and that's, Exp is a company.
Let's see how that go, honey.
But the thing with them is, it's so tumultuous to have to work with a company, because they are the company. There's not anybody else doing all these conferences.
It's very limited. That's very another limited. Thing that people should know. It's very limited.
Very limited.
And you,
but they also, like, years ago, mixed me and Molina Williams Haas up. Molina is a beautiful, dark-skinned Black woman.
I need you to Google both of them. Already out the gate, browner skin.
But I also had a name tag on. That was very, it was like one of those big square name tags.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, I
so, know. And then they put it up on Twitter, and they got called out by a Black woman. Bianca Loriano was the first person to be like, hey, what the hell is this? And then they didn't even say anything. They just took it down. They didn't apologize. And then they were like, well, we took it, when it was called out again, they were like, well, we took it down.
You didn't, that's not.
Right. And then they made the brown person that was working for their education sponsor, who had nothing to do with this, apologize to me. Not them. It was a different company completely, but that company was sponsoring the education. So that person and that company apologized and gave me some other, like, the next time they flew me out, which now I can say because fuck it, but they flew me out, told me not to tell nobody that they were flying me out, and paid and had me do a class in the store as like an extra way to make money, and got me on Emily Morse's podcast. I knew all of it was them trying to fix fluff. But did I take it? Yes, because it's opportunity. But did I let it go? No. And years later, into 2020, we do the lockdown. We lock down, and Xmas has a round table on Zoom with all the Black people, and I got to tell the story, and everybody was like,
"That was fun. What a time!"
And I got a handwritten, "I hope you know that we're sorry." And I'm like, "So now it's put to rest because they said sorry here, but you also sent me a handwritten note."
They tired of you. They was like, but
but the thing is like, for how long do I have to keep bringing up that you never apologize? At that point, I think it was 4 years by the time they came around, like, to apologize. Yeah. So, you know, that's the shit we have to deal with, is like, we still got to work in these spaces while side-eyeing, while being angry about stuff. We don't have the luxury to just walk away. We don't have, and some people like, yes, you do. And it's like, yes, but what I'm doing, it would be very hard for me to be in Congress with brands and things if I didn't go to these trade shows. It would be very hard for me to like get a wider audience if I wasn't on Instagram. It would be very hard for me to, you know, to do a lot of things. And so we often have to swallow down or just put it in a box until we finish doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
Or we got to be the bad guy. So sometimes I got to be that bitch online who's just like, fuck this award. The trophy sits over here now because I finally got that. And why I felt comfortable, because it took 2 years for there to be more than me. And the moment there were multiple brown and Black faces, I felt comfortable saying, thank you for this. And now I'm going to win it.
Yeah. Sex is fun. So, like, I also want people to know, like, we have so much fun, and I have moments that I sit and I'm like, I have such a cool life. Like, this is wild. But also, right, we'll talk about happy parts or whatever, but this is the trauma within. Have you seen, experienced, witnessed what or felt trauma within working in this industry?
Definitely. Most definitely. I think there's the battle. It's the battle of knowing the shit that happens. Ugh, I tend to be a person people tell things. So hearing about stuff that's gone on, witnessing shit that happens, like online harassment, getting roped into that because you're either adjacent to or trying to stand up for people and you get pulled in, and just knowing stuff and then having to go be at these spaces where people are like, oh my god, we know about like Ron Jeremy and all the things that he was doing.
Did he die?
I don't know if he died yet. I know it was, they weren't thinking,
he's on hospice.
I think he's on hospice and they were going to let him out to go to hospice. I don't think he died
by
yet.
The time this come out, honey, he might have passed. He might be, but you know, don't rest well.
Yeah, right. Well, but then having seen him at things and it plays back and you're like, oh. And hearing stories about like somebody I know, somebody I'm close to was like, oh, I think he drugged me. I'm pretty sure he drugged me. And like, I remember hanging out with him and then not feeling well and then going back to my room and him coming and trying to get in, like knocking, be like, oh, let me in. And her being wherewithal enough to be like, no. And he like stayed outside her room for a long time, like trying to get in, to be like, oh, let me, I'll help you. She's like, I don't know you. Like, while she's in between vomiting. But she's like, I think I'm, and then when everything came out, she was like, oh my God. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so just feeling that you can't be safe. Like, there's very few spaces that you have to, that you can feel safe. Feeling like I've made friends now, and like with some of the men who are very like, don't talk to him, because I'm like, oh, thank you, you're an ally. Like, they're like, don't do that. And learning the history, because you got to learn who to fucking watch out for and who not to be around. And
it's so scary.
It's very scary.
Prepare for the predators. But also, my question always is, so you know this person's a predator, then why are they still here?
Right.
Because it's the power aspect.
But also, like, I'm fat, and I know they're not necessarily coming after me, but it's also, like, then I feel responsible to make sure people are not walking off with somebody who is super intoxicated and they're not intoxicated. And it's like, do they know that person? Like, you know, we go through this because we all party at the bar after a lot of times at things. And you're like, I get Mama Bear and I'm like, you okay? And do you know that, like, you know him like that? Or like, y'all work together and figuring stuff out. And it is such a thing because it's still part of our work.
Yeah.
And it's kind of part of the vibe of things that you don't like that it's the vibe of things. And again, this is the differences in our communities. Cause when you go to like sex ed conferences, it's a different vibe. People are about,
well
to a degree, to a degree. Difference in,
there we go. The specific conferences. Cause one, there's so many sex ed conferences that happen across the world.
Right.
And so if you're listening to this, they're everywhere and different types, right? Like, but also to have a space that is created for us, we got sex down south.
Right.
Right. Like,
yes.
Which is also like a magic place. Every place has its situations, but the fact that we have to continuously create because they'll be like, well, we let so-and-so do it. You know, there's more than one Black sex educator. I don't know if you knew. There's more than one.
Many much moosin. So many. Like it's like that we have to create the spaces, but also that we then have to highly police those spaces to,
because some of y'all show up and act up.
Right. But to get it to be what we want it to be, and then you go into these other spaces and you're like, it's not hard. Right? Like that's what I come in when I go into some of these spaces. I'm like, the thing that you are struggling with is not hard to do because I see people doing it with a lot less money. You have too much money to be acting like you can't make sure things aren't, you know, going down the way they're going down. So yeah, and that's hard. It's a hard thing to metabolize in your body to like not to know this is the community you're a part of, and like, how do you separate yourself from the shit, and how do you, and it's finding your people. I mean, we all, you've been to the dinners, and when I look around those tables, those are not people that I feel any kind of way, like I wouldn't be able to trust. I feel like those are people I can, not all the dinners.
I like a free dinner though, so like you said, I'm gonna go.
No, but the ones we plan, the ones that we're like,
oh, those are fun.
Where we ask people to come out. When it's those are people that we're like, you're in the circle. We can trust. What we're here, we're keeping it. We're gonna.
We all get to sit down and be like, woo!
Yes. And if you look around the fucking table, everybody is somehow marginalized. The ligga pigga tigga. We got the blacks and the browns. We got, you know.
I'm like thinking about The Last and Me, looking around. Then we get Zoe. Ah!
Right, and like, like in a sex swing. What are you doing? What you doing in there?
How long have you been doing this? Like, I know you've been doing, like, how long have you been doing it and actually been, like, calling it, like, your job or your career?
Ooh. It's been a decade. It's been a solid decade because. Ooh.
She's an elder.
I am an elder because, I've been at SHAG a decade, right? And at that point, it was my job. I think the moment I stopped having a muggle job, that I stopped doing anything outside of the realm of sex was when I started working at SHAG. Because at first I was like going to conferences, but hiding my face, not putting pictures online. Nobody knew. I was never telling anybody my muggle name, and I wasn't talking about stuff on Facebook. And there was like a lot of protective measures because I still had a regular job. I still, you know. And when I got the job at SHAG, like that could all change because I didn't have to my boss finding out, okay. She was like, that's Lola. Like, you know, like you know, so it's not that point, this is when that shifted for me. And it's gotten slightly better. I will say I feel like we're still arguing. We are still pushing for what
we're still
deserve.
Undoing a lot.
We're yes.
Undoing.
Yeah. We're undoing a lot. We're enduring a lot still, but I feel we are more heard. I feel like we're having to explain why less, right? Like, I feel like before it was a lot of like, why should you treat us like humans? Oh, let me tell you all the ways. I feel like that was always something that felt like was happening, that we were always having to.
Not the Sululu, y'all. It's
listen. But that was what was going on, right? Like, I feel like we were always having these like, well, here's what's going on. And that's with, when I say marginalized identities, we're talking about disabled folks. We're talking about Black and brown folks of all stripes. We're talking about LGBTQIA+. We were all in that pot trying to explain why we deserve, sex workers, always, why we deserve space. Why do we deserve decompression spaces? Like, how many of us had to fight for the breakout groups, for the meetups? I remember, and how many white people would challenge us at camp? At camp, the year we were, the first year of your camp, I remember having too many conversations with old white men that looked like they literally lived on top of the mountain about why they couldn't sit at the Black people table.
But you know when it really gets spicy was that second year, because the Blacks showed up, honey.
In mass.
And we all, they were pissed.
They were pissed.
They were very angry. That was a real, first year I was like, what the hell? The second year really was a shift and we forced it.
Yeah.
Even with the person whom I don't speak to anymore that creates and owns. Like, we all had to like learn in this. And so there's been so much that you have endured and like navigated and continue to. And I want to ask you directly, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what have been your, let's start with the low. What have been your lows and your highs in this industry?
Ooh. The lows have definitely been those moments where you get reminded that there are people who just don't think that you are human or worthy, or that you know who you are, like that you know what you know, or that you belong, right? And that has been for many different things, like being fat and Black and queer and talking about things, but having people like try to knock you down a peg. And I've had collectively so many of those experiences where I really like, where it shook me, where I had to go home and like really sit with like, this is not a person you should be hearing or believing in what they are, what they're saying. But you know, for every one person that's talking to you out loud, there's like 15 that agree with them. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and knowing that, and I think that's been my low, is even when you feel so sure in your footing, there's somebody there to pull the rug out under. Another camp experience, that man that we had kicked out of our cabin because he was being inappropriate.
I sure did.
But sure after, did. Like, I had hosted the talent show that year. And I'm good at what I do. Like, I am an entertainer. I'm very good at on the fly. I know how to run a show. I know how to keep it moving. I'm good at what I do. And I know that. And then he comes up to me and he goes, you should do this for a living. And that is, and people go, well, what's wrong with that? It's like, he was at the same camp we were all at. Multiple times, respect had been put on my name, loudly. And not just me talking about what I do, but other people talking about what I do. Reed talking about what I do. The man who runs the camp talking about what I do. The fact that I got invite, like, to ask to host a thing, also had somebody go, why you? That was, you know, and I'm like, but you know, those two things, like the why you, that's violent and you know, she just has problems, but the like, you should do this, when you've been in the room and people have been, I've been talking about what I do for years, other people are talking about what I do. I had done multiple talks that year. Like, I hosted the show.
We was on that year because the squad showed up, honey.
Right. So that was squad time, and also Wakshin was there. Like, there was so much happening. And then it was just like, you have spent this entire time ignoring me because I'm not somebody you're attracted to. And this is a man who had been doing that all of camp. If anybody who wasn't thin and white and pretty wasn't talking to him, he would like was talking. If they weren't that, he would just ignore them. Literally not take in their presence. Yeah, like I watched other big bodied women talk to, like, say a thing, not trying to hit on him, but like trying to be in a conversation we're all in, and he would just like act like they weren't there. So the fact that there was a human who had just decided I had no value and had ignored all these things until he couldn't, because if you're at the show and I'm running the show and I'm doing the things, you're up there. And then you think you're giving me, you know, an opinion because it's your opinion, right? Like, I don't need your opinion. I know what I'm good at. You telling me something doesn't make me better at it, and it doesn't make me, you know, go, oh, thank, like, fuck you. Like, this is not my first rodeo. And it was just the way it was done, and I was like, you need to get out of my face. Like, and that kind of shit, right? So that kind of shit where you're just like, ugh, like, it doesn't matter how hard I do something.
Yeah.
There's always going to be somebody who doesn't see you, conceptualize you, you know, you're not visible to them because you are XYZ.
Yeah. Okay. So what have been the highs? Because I know you've had them. I've seen them.
I mean, yes, getting on two TV shows, but I don't think it was just the getting on. It was the being reached out to. And when it said, how'd you find me? They're like, well, everybody was saying your name. And I think that has felt good because it's that people talk about me because I am good at what I do. And I am... Yeah. You know, people know that. Right. And that it's coming from a place like it wasn't because I sought it out. It wasn't because they, you know, just needed somebody on the fly. It was people were like, have you spoken to Lola yet? Have you spoken to Lola yet? And that was such a gift. And also the, like, I got the HBO thing because I worked with an artist years before. She remembered me. We're still in touch, but she had remembered me. She got approached by a talent scout and said my name. And that talent scout found me, told me about it, and said, like, oh, yeah, Kira. Kira, like, told me. And I was like, oh, I haven't talked to Kira in 8. So I had to be like, hey, girl, thank you. And she's like, oh. Like, as soon as they said this, I knew you. But that is that I know I make an impression, and it's a positive impression. And that I really am showing people who I am. And I think that is always a high for me. Because I feel like a lot of us walk through this world, right? And are we being our authentic selves? Are we being true to ourselves? Are we really being us? Are people seeing us for who we are? And when you get that push of like, yes, people are seeing you. It's like...
Yeah. It can feel lonely here sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah, you do need people. Like, if you are going to do this, you need people, which... What kind of tips would you give to newbies? Because we also get reached out to, and it's like, I want to do what you do. And I'm always like, no, you don't, because you don't even know what I do. No. I'm like, what do you
do? I mean, I do.
Have any tips?
Find someone. I will always say, any marginalized person wanted to get into this work, I will always talk to you for free. Mm-hmm. Because there's not, there needs to be more of us. And it can't stop with us. We can't be the generation that's like, powerhouses and, you know, all the intersections, and then it drops off because people aren't reaching back. Like, I'm always reaching back and saying, come be. But I'm gonna have you, I try to tell people all the pitfalls, like everything we've been talking about. Like, don't get it wrong, I love what I do. It is part of my everyday. It is, and it's also like I breathe it because it's what is the phrase? Like, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And yes, do I get tired? Do I get burnt out? Do I get stressed?
Absolutely.
Yes.
1,000%.
But I'd rather be burnt out and stressed because I'm doing some shit I love. And sometimes it's hard and it's a lot because it's just me, than be working at a desk. And nothing wrong with a desk job, but that for me was
not for me.
It was, you know, that those kinds of jobs were such a drain on my soul. And now when I'm tired, but I still believe in what I'm doing. I'm not just tired and ready to like fucking burn it all down and walk away and fuck this job. And, you know, so I always try to impart upon people like the pitfalls of it. Realize there's so many different things you can do in this work. and that it's not one, there's no one true way. Like how I do things and you do things are different from the way Dr. Lex does things and the way, you know, like there's so many people who, the way Erica Hart does things, and you have to find what speaks to you and the way that you're able to communicate with people. And maybe that looks like you're going to be a sex therapist and maybe you won't be out in the forefront. Like I'm a Leo, the edutainment works for me because I want to be in front. I like show. I like the show, but I also like the show with giving knowledge. Yeah. It makes me happy, but you got to know what you want to do and you have to know how, what's going to work for you. But find your people. It's like you said, find your people, but find your real people. Like don't just glom on. Like find people who you can cry to, come to with a problem, who won't steal your shit, like who you know you can.
Because they be thieving.
You can't tell everybody everything.
But, I've seen my work on MTV.
Right. I think I recently just gave away a idea that maybe on something because they're like, oh, we contacted somebody. I was like, that's great, but I told you this because I wanted to do this. But whatever. It's not meant to be mine. It'll come in other ways. But, you know, you need to find people who, even when it's not about work, when I was falling apart, if it wasn't for the squad and for you and Hunter, I don't know where I'd be. I was in the middle of getting ready to go on a tour with Sex at a Go-Go, and my ex asked for the divorce, and my life was falling apart, and I didn't feel like I could talk to the people in my life, like my everyday life, the people who live here. I had a couple people that I could, but for the most part, it was just like, I don't want to tell this story all the time. I also, you know, you're navigating, trying to be unravel things in a healthy way and not turn it into like bullshit extravaganza, trying to keep your side of the street clean, but which as a petty person was very hard to do.
But you did it so good.
I did. I did it in a way that still fed my petty soul because
it did.
You know, I was good with all the things, but having that kind of support, people in your phone that live all over the country can still be some of the best support, but having those people, even if it's one other person, having somebody you can say, oh, can you read over this for me? Because you've written something and you read it 40 times and you're not going to see anything. And then the person will be like, oh, girl, you left out. I'm like, oh my God, thank you for looking at this. Or give me your idea. Can I get some feedback? Like having built-in people who know who you are, who know your voice or know what your aim is, who really understand you, be able to go, ooh, I think it would be better if you did this. Or you just fielding, having somebody to talk about your wins with in a way where you can be excited and it doesn't have to be this. Because I know some people having like social media posts don't feel good for everybody. And I strike the balance between sometimes taking it to public because I'm just really like, I want you to know this thing I worked on. But then there are things
I struggle with that. I'd be forgetting. I'd be like, yeah, I did that thing. So anyway, because it's also the hustle and bustle because bills is due.
Exactly. So having people that are right there to say that, but just having that kind of support system. And also who knows all the bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is the community we're in. And it's great if everybody does something a little different. Like the way the squad came together was a very
trauma
of camp, buses, things, drama. People being tired and burnt out from having been in the woods for a week. And then we all decided going to a conference directly after was a good idea. And it wasn't.
Keep the party going.
Yeah.
Keep it going.
We were all tired, but you end up with a group where we have therapists. We have different types of sex educators, people who work in sex shops, people who just work in the sex arts. Like, and we are a melange, but we're all friends and we can spend time with each other. Well, some of us. And but you know what? But I mean, you know, we have this space to lean on each other. And also when we're working on specific things, like Cece did her podcast and tapped all of us. I was like, yes, ask. We are built in. You got 12 people you can have on your show, you know?
Is it 11?
It's 11. I think it was 13 and now it's 12.
Oh.
Either way. But finding your people is very important. Yeah. And it might take you some time, but finding your people. Also, though, still having people who don't do this work, who know you, but who know you, love you, and also understand what you do. So there's not going to be judgment about what you do. There's not going to be also making you work all the time. Like, I have a friend, she does ask me stuff, and then she puts money in my PayPal. Or she Venmos. She's like, thank you. And then, boom. And I'm like, oh, thank you, girl. She's like, yeah, $20, because you just gave me some advice. You told me something to buy. I love it. I love it, because I don't mind helping her. It's never anything I can't do. It's not anything super in depth, but I appreciate that she appreciates that this is my expertise and it's my work. So finding people outside of it that know what you do, but like can give you that respite from it, right? Where you're not going to be doing shop talk. It's good. Yeah. And get Grammarly. No, for real. Get Grammarly. Get a Grammarly subscription.
Good Grammarly. I have two tips. If you have an idea, Google it first, because there might be someone that has already done it, and then you're gonna be like, I created this, and then you'll get snatched up. That's the first thing.
There's another Dirty Lola. We haven't sued each other because we do completely different things, but when I at the time, but look, she didn't exist at the time when I came up with my name. I also Googled it, which is why none of her social media, I'm always getting tagged. And the thing is she's never reached out to me and I've never reached out to her because we do completely different things. And I think she knows she came after me because it's why she doesn't have that name. Like, she can't have the Instagram. She doesn't have like all her social media stuff is not Dirty Lola, even though her company is called that. But we don't need to step on each other's. She makes candles.
Look for it.
I did that with Sex at a Go-Go. I sat and I had so many names that I Googled and something else came up. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, nope. Okay, yeah. We can't do that.
People try to steal Trauma Queen, and you know what? It don't ever work, because you know what? Mama has a trademark, baby.
But also then they're like, but ours is different. No, it's
don't
not.
Care.
It's also
no, it's
a,
not.
But it's
no,
also it's a not. Podcast. How is it different? Like,
it's not. And
I teach about sex. The candle lady makes beautiful votives with celebrities on it. We are very different. One day, very maybe different. We'll collab.
That'd be so fun. Y'all should finally do it.
One day I'll reach out and be like, hey, girl.
the last tip I will give is the reminder of you don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's only so much. There's only so many blowjob classes we need. Right. Here's what I will say is, figure out, see the people whose work you love, see what you feel is missing and or what you can bring that is personal that will upgrade that and make sense to you.
Right.
Because there's so many blowjob classes.
There are, but the thing is also realize your age range, right? So like if you're younger, those young people haven't found us and probably won't find us or come to our classes because we don't maybe appeal to them in the way you would.
Yeah.
Same thing with, like, we have our elders who are now more appealing to, like, older folks because they understand. So, as I'm aging, I'm looking to Joan because Joan's already there. Joan's already been living that life. And while I can talk about now the things I'm going through in my 40s, I can't talk about what's going to happen in my 60s. So, there's always going to be people. I'm seeing people in our age range doing sex and aging, but it's going to come from a different place than it did when Joan was doing it. It doesn't mean you don't do it, because it's going to be a different spin hearing Goody talk about it. And
there's also new information. Always.
New information. There's new, also the way you connect with people is going to be different. How you do things, but don't take somebody's shit verbatim. Right. Don't. And while the topics exist, like maybe put another spin, or even if you do a one-on-one, also just realize different parts of the country. None of us are really national. Like, there's not a lot of international sex educators who are teaching courses that are going worldwide, right? No. We don't have a pit bull of sex ed. So, but you know, Mr. Worldwide. But that doesn't exist. So, if you're on the, when I had people reach out to me and they're like, hey, which I've always appreciated, there have been people who reached out and said, I have an idea for a show. It's very similar to Sex at a Go-Go. I don't want to take the name, but I just want to make sure I want to get your blessing that I'm doing a similar thing. And I was like, yeah, just don't use Sex at a Go-Go. Like, yeah, do it. Go for it. Like, you're in fucking Utah or Montana. Like, you're somewhere I probably won't be anytime soon, and you want to do a monthly show and give people there something that they don't have and that I can't give, do it. Please. Thank you for reaching out. Thank you for letting me know you exist. I would love to work with you one day, like, if we're in the same place, if I get to you. But thank you. Thank you for not being an asshole and just taking my whole show. But I'm like, it's also going to be different because you're not me. I am Sex at a Go-Go. The way I do things is so different than how you're going to do things. And the people you get to come on are going to be different. It's going to be a different thing. And that's okay. But I think it's respecting people's shit, right? Like, not just taking things because it's like, well, if I change up this, or it's like, like, don't take my show name.
The answer's no.
Right.
Like, the answer's no. You know what? I'm going to have to take a look after this conversation, actually. Okay, so we talked about so many things, ups, downs, ins and outs, but I have decided, because it's my show and I do what I want, to end the show with me actually getting to be newsy. What is the wildest thing someone has texted or DM'd you lately? And when I say lately, like the last 2 weeks. And wild can vary. We've had cute wild, what the fuck wild, whatever wild.
We'll just talk about what happened this morning. That man sending me a video to break off a date last minute.
A video.
It was like in the text message, but a video. And why it was wild is because he could have typed out, hey, I gotta cancel tonight because whatever. But the fact that he made a video, like a little movie, like a little, where he said my government name and then proceeded to, like, give me so much information that didn't help his guy. Like, it didn't make it better. It just was less like, what is happening? What is going on? And it's just wild because it's the audacity of men. The audacity to say I'm not flaky when you literally are canceling 7 o'clock in the morning and we have a 6 p.m. date. After you made the plan, like you reached out to me yesterday. It's just like, what is going on? Like, what is happening?
What did he wear?
He was at work, he had like a button-down shirt that was a couple buttons open, and his blazer, and like he's in his office, and you know I was zooming in trying to see things if I could see. He angled it where there was no diploma or anything on the wall.
He knew.
He was like, she's gonna try to look. No, but he was, you know, and that's, it felt like a political, like a, my fellow Americans, like that's what I was getting. That's the thing, the vibe that I was Lola. In bed. He literally was like, hello, redacted, because he said my name, but he's like, I once again, can't even say it without laughing, but he goes, I once again have to cancel our date at the last minute. And I just want you to know, I'm not flaky.
That's not, it's in the title, you breaking it up,
like, right? But then I don't, so now I'm just like, the story he told, I'm like, are you also telling me like your wife doesn't want you dating at all? Like, what's going on? There are more questions. So all I said was, good morning, thank you for letting me know, because I don't care enough to, like, I'm not trying to solve anything. I don't want to be part of the problem. No, I don't want to be added and given your problems. Because I'm not a problem, and I'm not making a problem for anybody. But I don't want to receive your problems. And clearly there's stuff that hasn't been talked about or whatever's going on for your wife to be like, I'm not okay with you going out tonight. I need more time. Okay, all right. Don't make that my problem. So,
Woo! What a time. I love that question. Okay. Tell the girls, the guys, the theys, and the nims where to find you. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, where I hang out the most, at Dirty Lola. I'm also on Threads. I'm not really on X anymore, like Twitter, whatever. I just keep it for the tea. Just because people are still there, and I find funny things. But all the things, I'm Dirty Lola, and then my website is dirtylola.co. Sex at a Go-Go will be next month in New York, so you can go to sexatagogo.com to get more details about that.
Go to the show. It's so fun. I've been it's in the show. Time. It's so you fun. Have. Do it.
You have. You should Do come. It. You should come.
Okay. Well, she wants me to catch a flight. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time.